it's time to go out and...
From a nightclub at the end of the world, this is Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth, coming to you on February the 10th, 2013. Welcome, everybody. Christopher Dorner has been front and center, and it's had me doing a lot of interviews over the last 3 days, big ones, because I have insight into that situation. We're going to talk about that tonight, but we're going to make that relevant and tie it into everything else, or try to tie it into everything else that's going on. Last night at 8:29 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, the Associated Press ran a one-sentence story. I have never seen the Associated Press run a one-sentence story. Los Angeles, AP. Los Angeles police say they'll reopen investigation into firing of ex-cop wanted in three killings. They don't even mention Christopher Dorner's name in that. But as I read that, being a journalist, someone who has worked in it for newspapers, I've been a freelance writer and someone who's been doing this for a long time, that was extremely unusual. That sounded to me like a demand being met, and I do have reason to believe that Christopher Dorner is in negotiations, but I certainly have no reason to doubt or dispute the fact that he is, for the time being, in control of the situation. Los Angeles Mayor Anthony Villaraigosa offered a $1 million reward today for the capture of Christopher Dorner, and I don't believe anybody in officialdom wants him captured. I believe they all want him killed. Hopefully that is not what he wants as well, but that's a likely assumption there too, certainly justified. But in terms of the $1 million reward, that's an easy cost-saving benefit. I would venture to say that in terms of overtime, with LAPD having dispatched security teams and gone on tactical or to some 40 locations, that with police departments all over California, Nevada, Arizona, I understand, any place where there was a relative or mention of anyone on the so-called manifesto, Lompoc police are on alert. There have been multiple, and this is LAPD probably spent $1 million within 72 hours. So $1 million reward is nothing, because the overtime costs can and will bankrupt cities, and the police departments cannot keep their guards up forever. Christopher Dorner remains at large. I have extended an invitation, and let me say very clearly right up front, I do not expect him to call tonight. I think he's smarter than that, but the line is open. I'm certain that he knows who I am. He may have heard the interviews I have done on Russia Today, Sirius XM Radio with KPFK in Los Angeles, with a station in New York. He may have watched the Facebook page. He would know that that if he wants to deliver a message, he can hear. And there is a connection, of course, because I'm former LAPD and I spent a good part of my life investigating covert operations, hanging, associating with, learning, and making good friends with special warfare personnel. And Chris Dorner was one of those. He was a riverine assigned to riverboats for underwater, freshwater diver insertions. That SEAL teams, he provided security. He had a command. He was a Lieutenant 03, Officer Grade 3, in the U.S. Navy, and he was accomplished and skilled. And so he's running rings around that. So let me say that if anybody wants to call in tonight and pose as Christopher Dorner, bear in mind there will be three very tough questions waiting for you to answer that he should be able to answer, but anyone trying to impersonate him will not. So those are there. The board operator has those. All right, this is all part of the fact that everything is broken. Everything is breaking down everywhere, and I am perceiving this. I mean, I heard this as a cry that for just someone, some institution, somewhere, something to behave honorably, something to walk like it talked, to be what it said it was, instead of an empty, hollow press release. But here's the perspective for this. In May of 1974... that's a long time ago. I had been out of the police academy for just about 4 months. I had already interned for LAPD for more than 3 years while I had been an undergraduate at UCLA, including for a chief of police, Ed Davis. I was well known. I knew the department very well, knew the procedures. I was working in the south end of Wilshire Division with my training officer. His name was Dave. I was driving that night, and Dave had been a policeman for about 8 years. He was a police officer three with two stripes. He had not served in the military, to my knowledge, but he was regarded as a competent officer who was not known for being a hard charger. He was a guy who did his job, didn't go out of his way to chase bad guys, liked to collect the paycheck, didn't want to overwork. In the middle of May 1974, the Symbionese Liberation Army had already committed a series of bank robberies and kidnappings in Northern California, and they had just relocated to Southern California. A police car had been blown up, a bomb had been placed at a police station. And I remember this particular day very well because it was the day that a shooting had taken place at Mel's Sporting Goods in Inglewood when members of the SLA tried to shoplift some stuff, and they all of a sudden, after a security guard tried to stop them, they came out with carbines, shotguns, handguns. I believe they had one automatic weapon. They shot up the sporting goods store, and they left in a red van. It was very clearly described. All I remember now is the red van. But I was driving in South Central Los Angeles that night, and the whole city was on edge because a number of police officers had been either shot at or, you know, bombs placed near the police car. And it was clear that the SLA wanted to kill a cop. And I was driving southbound on Arlington Avenue, that's in Los Angeles, crossing over the Santa Monica Freeway. There's a bridge there. And all of a sudden, lo and behold, a van perfectly matching, and I'm not talking about a mistaken identification. It looked exactly like the red van that was wanted from Mel's Sporting Goods. We were in the right neighborhood. I spotted it, and I initiated a traffic stop, and I told Dave, you know, we're pulling over and stopped, and I put us code 6 out for investigation. And then I looked, and I kept looking, and it looked like the van. And I said, okay, Dave, tell me what to do. He was my training officer. And my training officer was absolutely frozen, paralyzed with fear and terror. I think we had the van. I'm sure that he looked at things, and he was thinking, oh, shit. And I sat there looking at my training officer, scared to death. And I said, Dave, come on, man. Tell me what to do. Come on. Put us code 6. Ask for backup. He couldn't move. He didn't move. And I was faced with a very stark decision. And after about 15, 20, 30 seconds, it seemed like an eternity, of trying to get my training officer unfrozen, I realized that he wasn't going to come around, and that whatever was happening now, he was no longer an asset or a partner. He was a weight. And I chose what I considered to be the right thing. I turned off the red lights. I backed up. I made a U-turn, and I drove away, and I let the van go. The next night, which I believe May 16th, something like that, 1974, that red van and five members of the Symbionese Liberation Army were surrounded in a house on 54th Street in neighboring Southwest Division. And the SLA shootout took place, in which all five SLA members died. And I will never forget that, because that was, Dave was, not all cops are the same, and a lot of cops are like this. They are very good at what they do. They don't look for violent confrontations. They're trained, they carry a gun, but they know that most people that they ever encounter with a gun who will be far less trained and far underarmed, far less well armed than the cop. Now, in 1974, we had Smith & Wesson 38 caliber revolvers with lead ball ammunition. You might have, well, six shooters, you might have thrown the gun at, and a shotgun with four rounds of double aught buck. That doesn't compare to the weaponry that is available to police now, but even now, Christopher Dorner, being who he is better armed and better trained and better equipped. And you will see, and it is obvious what's happening, is that a great many law enforcement officers realizing, since one police officer has already been killed and another wounded, this is not an easy 9-to-5 job with the civil service benefits. And that is wreaking havoc. And we see that in the fact that there have been two now confirmed shootings of innocent people, one in both in Torrance, actually. The Palm Springs Police Department raided a dentist's office because somebody thought that Chris Dorner was getting his teeth cleaned. I don't know. But we see this dramatic and unhealthy overreaction, which has got to be scaring the bejesus out of every law enforcement agency in any of the affected regions. That's it. I am not advocating for Chris Dorner. I am commenting on the situation. And that is a very, very serious, tough place to be in, not to mention the fact that Chris Dorner, having been with the Riverines, having been an officer, having held a command, and having read his background and studied his military background, he is an operator. He has worked with special forces personnel. He has their skill sets. More importantly, as a result of his military assignments in Naval Reserve, he knows every trick, every tool that the Los Angeles Police Department, the FBI, the Secret Service, the U.S. Marshals Service, anybody would be using to track or hunt him. And it is very apparent to me that he has taken a great many months to plan this. His LAPD appeals were exhausted sometime in 2009. The first shootings did not occur until after he was honorably discharged the Friday before the shootings from the United States Naval Reserve with a clean record. This is not somebody you can easily trash. I have read his manifesto, the uncensored version that's out there. I suspect that it has been tampered with. The writing styles changed dramatically midway when he goes into a rant about that could have been written by the DNC and Barack Obama and Dianne Feinstein about gun control, and he digresses and wanders further. The writing style from a forensic standpoint, I won't know that he wrote every word of that until I hear him say that he did. However, I have read all of his allegations about the way his trial board was handled, and I find them to be entirely credible. In fact, he makes a very clear prima facie case that with physical evidence in terms of witness statements and a DVD, that he did not make the false statements accusing his white female training officer of excessive force. He did not falsify those statements. That's what he was allegedly fired for, that's what he was fired for. And having read that, I think that his termination proceeding stinks to high heaven. I will say that clearly based upon just what I have read. The Washington Post has just put up the court records. I'll read those tomorrow. But I don't think that position's going to change. This is not a flunky. This is not someone who can be dismissed. And he's clearly making that case. All of that being said now, he has been at large for a week, and he has eluded capture. In the meantime, public opinion is swinging wildly. LAPD and other agencies are looking like Keystone Cops, and I think this is well-deserved. There's an old saying that those who win in a rigged game get stupid, and the good old boy network, the old guard, if you will, within LAPD has not been broken. It is still there, and I think that this is what he ran into. But as I step back from this as a writer, I look at this man, a veteran who has worked with special forces, served in combat, much the same way that I would look at members of the 75th Rangers who showed up to protest during the Occupy movement in Oakland, one of whom was shot, I believe, accidentally in the head with a 40-millimeter tear gas canister, gave him a skull fracture. But another member of 75th Rangers was beaten savagely, and the videotape will linger with me for the rest of my life, by Oakland Police Department. And the military and the police are bifurcating. They are not one and the same. And I will say also that it is my firm belief that throughout LAPD and throughout many law enforcement agencies, there are a great many cops who agree with what Christopher Dorner says. What makes Christopher Dorner unique is that he has the skill set to evade capture and to stay many steps ahead of his pursuers. My guess is probably he's holed up somewhere now eating Vienna sausages and baked beans, staying low, because he understands that law enforcement cannot maintain these adrenaline levels nor these massive overtime expenditures for long, and this is right out of special operations warfare. And I have to see this as karmic chickens coming home to roost in many ways, but I would, if there was a symphony of the collapse of human industrial civilization with all the things that are going on right now. Climate collapse, governmental corruption, economic collapse, massive, air pollution and smog choking people in major cities all over the world, earthquakes, droughts, blizzards, bizarre weather, all of the things that are happening. If that was the symphony, right now Christopher Dorner is the horn section. That's the way we need to look at him, not as separate from, but as a part of this crisis in human consciousness where we just want something to make sense, which is a perfect setup. We will come back more to talk about Chris Dorner here in just a few minutes. We have two songs tonight. The second song, second half of the show, as I promised, the first new white trash song in over 3 years. That I am so proud and so I love this song. I'm so proud and happy to bring to you. We will be playing that for you after the break. But right now, I think we need some commentary from Bob Dylan singing us and telling us that everything is broken. That's just to get us tuned up for the rest of the show. Here's Bob Dylan.
Broken strings, broken threads, broken springs, broken idols, broken heads, people sleeping in broken beds. Ain't no use jiving, ain't no use joking. Switches, broken gates, broken dishes, broken pots, streets are filled with broken hearts, broken words never meant to be spoken.
Well, that was written, like I believe, in the late 1960s, but Bob Dylan had it so right then, he has it right now, and we thank ourselves for music and people like that, because it allows us just to dial back in and get back in the groove and put things in perspective. God bless music and what it does for us. God bless art and what it does for us and how it helps us balance if we remember to take the action. There are lots of ways to do it. There's a guy named David Perdue. He was the second shooting we haven't heard about. This is from the L.A. Times. That was from yesterday. David Perdue was on his way to sneak in some surfing Thursday morning, the L.A. Times, right when police flagged him down. They asked, he's a white guy. and then sent him on his way later. But you know what? They followed him and stopped him, and they shot up his truck, and they grazed him. And it was a different make and a different color. That's what I'm talking about. Now, standing back from all this, when you look at a system that is this dysfunctional, it's easy to see that the stresses put on by a situation like the one involving Christopher Dorner will highlight, will crack a lot of other things that had just been holding together. And that's why I believe him to be so significant. I have believed that he has been many steps ahead for some time. I'm firmly convinced he's been planning this for months, and had thought meticulously that there was talk about that the truck that was burned out in near Big Bear Lake had a broken axle, which indicated to me that maybe that wasn't planned. But then I'm skeptical about everything. But the way Special Forces people would do it, or the way people doing that kind of military operations would do it, running a security team, Christopher would have regularly used thermite devices, which you use to throw into helicopters or equipment or gear that you leave behind so that it doesn't fall into enemy hands. And his truck looks pretty well like something like thermite, something real hot had gone off in the engine compartment. You know, he's still out there, and the fact that he has not been caught, and every day that he is not caught, his legend will grow, whether it's right, wrong, or indifferent. And his myth gains that power. I, you know, pretty much convinced that he does not want to be taken alive or doesn't intend to. But now that he understands that he has some power, and I believe that he is negotiating and some of his demands are being met, we want to see how this plays, because Christopher Dorner is someone who brings out, who enables us to see all the deep cracks. He's shining light in a lot of places where it needs to be shed. I do not defend what he has done. I do not condone. You know, if I were to say it, I would say that his cause was just regarding his termination, but that does not justify the actions that he has taken. What is so clear to me, after having been around so many special operations personnel for so long, with all the investigations that I did and the cases that I worked on, and the guys that I really got to know, spend time with, and actually receive some training from, is that he's operating the way Special Forces work. I've known many Special Forces operators, and when they're in country, when they're working in a theater, they will make book, they call it, a book on their targets. And in that book, they will target the family members, the wives, the children, the aunts, the uncles, where they live, where they go to school, of various targets. Because that is the nature of that kind of warfare. It's the way Special Forces worked in Vietnam, and these tactics have been carried out from Southeast Asia to Nicaragua to El Salvador to Costa Rica to Honduras to Mexico to Belize to Bolivia, Peru, Iran, Iraq, all over the Third World. This is what the United States government has been doing to people all over the world. 2 million Iraqi civilians dead. God knows how many Afghani civilians dead. Pakistani civilians with the drone strikes. We will talk about the drones. And so these chickens are coming home to roost. And this is a form of warfare and a form of tactics that he is not talking lightly about when he talks. He has clearly implemented those kinds of tactics. So there are ironies abundant all over the place here. Now, I don't know where this is going to go. I think it's far from over. I don't think the reward's going to make any difference. And I absolutely do believe that it's possible, because I know a great many disaffected operators, people who have worked in Special Forces, whether Navy or Army or whatever, Air Force, whatever, who are sick of being lied to. I mean, I've met Special Forces guys who would who told stories of being ordered to way behind enemy lines in North Vietnam to infiltrate and go surround a complex of hooches, and their controller or handler would say, okay, the hooch closest to the tree with the three stones, you are to go in there and kill everybody in the hooch. And they would think, okay, it's some big general, and they would find out after the trigger was pulled that they just wiped out the general's family and the children. There are a great many stories about this, and this is the kind of a warrior that Chris Dorner came back from Iraq, I'm sure fully aware of all of the crap that was going on over there. And this, I will tell you that this is just Mike Rupert now. I'm not writing anything for him, but I can certainly see him coming back and having survived his tours in Bahrain and Iraq, saying, okay, now I can work for LAPD, a good, clean police department, and I can really fight some bad guys. And you can understand where the frustration comes then. The frustration for so many honorable men and women who call themselves warriors and people of honor is that we just, like Sylvester Stallone said in Rambo, I want my country to love me as much as I love it. That's oversimplified. What we all need and want, and isn't that true? For every human being who is a citizen of every government and everybody in this country, what we want somewhere is for somebody in government, some institution, to walk the walk, to behave honorably, and to do what they tell us they're doing. And so Chris Dorner, as long as he is out there, is going to focus more and more attention on these inconsistencies, and I will use that as a canvas on which to paint. If you'd like to call in tonight, we're sneaking up on a break, and then I'm going to set up this great new white trash song, and I'm going to catch you up and weave in other events around the world. If you want to call in tonight, the number is 1-888-874-4888, 1-888-874-4888. I want to hear your thoughts on this. Stories have broken that the drones are being used in the search for, Chris. But that's because they're equipped with forward-looking infrared radar and sensors that can pick out a bunny rabbit, you know, from 500 feet. But I think they're looking in the wrong place in the San Bernardino Mountains. I think he's probably laughing his butt off at all the money that is being spent to get armored personnel carriers and helicopters and drones up there. I think it's premature to go to for anybody to say whether a drone will be intentionally used to take him out. I think that's foolish. Even the U.S. government wouldn't risk a drone strike that might kill 23 Pakistanis just to take out one cop. As far as the legal precedents are concerned, what legal precedents? Who cares? There's no law left, in case you haven't followed the lawsuit challenging the National Defense Authorization Act, in which Chris Hedges and Ray McGovern and others are plaintiffs. Has been moved out of U.S. District Court. It's working its way up to the appellate court. But as Chris Hedges observed in a recent commentary, it's pretty apparent because of the urgency of the White House appeals and the exemptions that are being requested that the NDAA provisions allowing indefinite detention of American citizens not charged with a crime is already being used. And that should be up to the Supreme Court quickly, in which case, I'm beginning to suspect that the Supreme Court will cave too, in which case, for the 157,000th time since 9/11 and the Patriot Act, we will know that the U.S. Constitution doesn't exist. Don't worry about legal precedents now. We have long since passed that point. We're rolling up here on a break at the bottom of the hour. This is Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth, on the Lifeboat Hour at Progressive Radio Network. We will be back with you with a new white trash song right after these messages.
I'm on my meltdown. I'm on my meltdown.
That music, whoever's working the board in New York, that's the wrong song. About that. Oh, no. That was part of the new song we're going to play. We were supposed to come back. Here I'm going to set up this to premiere this whole new song. I don't know how we got that in there, but we got by it. So that teased you. All right, so we are back here on the Lifeboat Hour in the second half of the show tonight, integrating the breakdowns that are happening everywhere. And in the meantime, while Christopher Dorner is doing his thing and rocking law enforcement and starting some much needed dialogue, in the meantime. From Zero Hedge tomorrow, and Zero Hedge has been doing great work for a long time, is China mobilizing for a war with Japan. We've been covering this for a long time. I covered it at CollapseNet for some time. I wrote about it. I predicted this many years ago. And those tensions are extremely high as the world competes for energy and limited resources and control the shipping lanes through which all the tankers bring oil to Japan, Korea, and China. And own their own little pockets of war. But Zero Hedge story posted yesterday. We don't know if it's merely a coincidence that a story has emerged discussing a Chinese mobilization in response to the ongoing territorial feud with Japan over the Diaoyu Senkaku Islands, depending upon which country is claiming them, and the proximal massive gas field, massive I would put in quotes, the very week that China celebrates its New Year and days after news that a Chinese warship was very close to firing on a Japanese destroyer. These tensions are continuing to increase. We don't know how much of the story is based in reality, and I like the way they qualify that's professional, and how much may be propaganda or furthering someone's agenda. What we do know, Zero Hedge writes, is that the source of the story, offshore-based Falun Gong, affiliated NTD TV, has historically been a credible source of information that the Chinese Communist Party desperately tries to censor, such as breaking news of the SARS epidemic in 2003, some 3 weeks before China publicly admitted it. Its motto is to bring truthful and uncensored information into and out of China. If that is indeed the case, and its story of major troop movements and mobilization of various types of military vehicles and artillery into the Fujian and Zhejiang provinces bordering on the East China Sea and closest to the Diaoyu Islands is accurate, then hostilities between China and Japan may be about to take a major turn for the worse. And I do not believe that is BS. There are so many lines, there are so many red lines. Wiggle room is rapidly disappearing around the world as everything else continues to fall apart. Unprecedented smog and air pollution continues to choke major cities and some countries as the reckless and impossible pursuit, this is me now, of infinite growth in the wake of diminishing energy resources intensifies the use of coal and unprecedented amounts of firewood as people in Greece and Germany and many other countries resort to chopping trees to replace heating oil they can no longer afford. We're suffocating ourselves, even as the climate seems to be doing a very good job of turning everything on its head. Multiple climatic self-reinforcing feedback loops, again with a tip of the hat to Guy McPherson, have been triggered, all of which support scientific conclusions that our species and possibly all life on the planet will be unable to survive, live here on this planet within as little as 10 to 15 years, and I think it might be less than that. From the objective scientific standpoint, the only solution is the cessation of industrial activity, and that may not solve the crisis as all of these mutually reinforcing cycles have now been triggered, or many of them have. As you all in New England and New York know, you've just been belted by a superstorm, 28 to 30 inches, following Hurricane Sandy. Now, Hurricane Sandy was followed by a blizzard, a hurricane followed by a blizzard within a week. Now we have this snow superstorm, and I'm hearing now that the forecast for New York, New England tomorrow is in the 40s with heavy rain. I don't know what heavy rain on top of 30 inches of snow will do, but it couldn't be pretty. Horrible droughts continue, and we see massive changes in the weather as a result. I believe the jet stream is being altered. Moscow is having the snowiest winter in 100 years. Well, I don't think they've had any snow in Chicago all year. Earthquakes and volcanic activity around the world strongly indicate that Mother Earth is rapidly in the process of making major changes, and I have a feeling that she could be speaking very loudly. There were a couple of large earthquakes this week in the Solomon Islands, I think an 8, followed by a second. We've had a 7.0 earthquake in Colombia. There have been major floods in South America, a 5.7 quake in Chile, and volcanic activity is increasing all around the world anomalously. But I think the saddest, one of the things that hits so hard is the continuing coverage of the Great Lakes, which you're seeing on both on my Facebook page and I believe also on CollapseNet as well. Lakes Michigan and Huron have sunk to the lowest levels ever recorded. The Michigan governor is proposing an $11 million plan to dredge the harbors, as if that's going to make a difference. The water is disappearing. And where is the water going? Well, it's being used in fracking. Fracking, that wonderful thing that gives us all that cheap natural gas. I believe it's being sold. Probably some of the Great Lakes water might even be being set all the way up for the enormous, copious amounts of water that are required for tar sands oil production, where you boil fresh water to make steam to wash this very sticky, gooey substance that is not oil out of the tar sands. The Great Lakes are being fracked dry, and there were stories of from several places this week about how serious the water shortages are in the Great Lakes. We are not behaving like we're sane. And there again, I guess if you just look at Christopher Dorner and his military record and his LAPD record, which was apparently a good one before they tried to trash him, just like mine was, this is all in the same key of insanity, in the symphony of collapse. Nearly half of all U.S. farms are now affected by super weeds that have appeared in response to Monsanto's beautiful, this is from Mother Jones, and they're pretty credible, that these super weeds now are resisting everything else. So life on this planet is resisting being controlled. And so with all of this, as we look at everything that's happening, the economic news is absolutely horrible. And you can find, if you want the details, go to CollapseNet.com. Also, some great stories show up on my personal Facebook page for Michael C. Rupert. We have 200 species going extinct a day. The skies are turning black. The weather is changing. The climate is changing. And we sit here, and over the course of the last year, I have tried so hard to drive home and to build on a point that's illustrated by Alcoholics Anonymous, is that there's a certain point in addictive, destructive behavior when science says that only a spiritual solution, catch that, science says that only a spiritual solution will work, which is the change of consciousness that we all want. And I have been empathizing and sympathizing not only with myself for being aware of this new consciousness, which I believe is being born, this Gaian consciousness, the fact that we all share this planet. We are all connected. And what happens with Chris Dorner and LAPD is definitely connected to what happens to the people in the Amazonian rainforest when the president of Brazil decides to build the third largest dam in the world and destroy 1 million acres of Amazon rainforest, including that part of the Amazon, destroying the lungs of the planet. And being 62 years old, as I turned last week, and again, I want to send my thanks to everyone who has sent birthday messages and cards. I received another check this week from Stephen Chambers. You all have made it possible for me to do what I'm doing right now without having to worry about where I'm eating for the next few months, and to get my car situation straightened out. I'm okay for now. I want to thank all of you. Your letters will be going out soon. But I empathize and I sympathize with all of us who are awake, those of us who listen to this program on a regular basis, those of us who understand, have a grasp on the shift that is happening as human industrial civilization comes crashing down much faster than most of us would care to see. And I thought back about the 60s when they talked about the age of Aquarius and we would enter a new sun and a lot of that new age stuff that was so optimistic. And we still hold those hopes in our hearts, and if we are vibrating that way, we can see and we can feel changes shifting from a fear to a love consciousness. We can salute and celebrate the emergence of a Gaian consciousness and permaculture and community and those people who are getting it as we pray to reach the 100th monkey. But there's a big difference between how happy and wonderful we were told it was going to be in the 1960s and what it is now, and there's a struggle. Because we know that there is no answer solely in the 3D material world. And this led, and this is a very strong theme for Inner Reach, which is the working title for the album that New White Trash is working on, and I'm so proud. The core of New White Trash is Doug Lewis, myself, and Ms. Kristen Weigard, who was the original Annie on Broadway, and who was in the original Broadway cast of Hair. So there's enormous history in the song that I'm about to play for you. But in this crucible of cold here in Colorado, with some assistance from some wonderful people, 19 incredible songs have emerged. We've only had the money, the instrumentation to finish one song. It is a song I am extremely proud to be associated with, and I am great. I love this song because what I'm trying to do is to comfort all of us. And what I and Doug on this inner reach, in the realization, as all mystics say, that the spiritual journey is one that goes within, and we are trying so hard, we with our hearts and with our work and with our daily efforts, with our prayers, and it's a prayer whether you say God up front and amen at the end or not. What you think and what you hold energetically in your consciousness is a prayer, and all of us who hunger for this redemption are having a hard time. It's getting hard in the inner reach, and that is the title of the song that I'm about to play for you. I sing the lead. I co-wrote the song with Doug Lewis. The background vocals are provided by Kristen Weigard, by Jessica Hollepeter, and by Leah Petmezas. Mr. Bob Rice, who mastered the song for us, Bob has mastered our album at New White Trash, worked before New White Trash's first album with Roger Waters. He has just finished working with Paul Simon. We're so pleased that he has lent his efforts. He plays bass on this song, and he mixed the song for us on this show tonight. We hope to raise, and we'll be doing some Kickstarters. We will be getting those sites up and hopefully bring you another one or two songs next week or the week after. We hope to raise enough money to finish this album. There's spirituality, strong Native American themes. There is an awareness of the crisis that surrounds the civilization here. Chris Weigard wrote some great songs that are uplifting and loving and playful. Doug Lewis has written a couple of killer songs that he's singing on. But there is a theme to this, and the theme to this is, I think, unique. And let's just play the song now, Inner Reach, let you listen to it. We'll come back and talk about it. I'm really proud of this, and I thank everybody who was involved. Here's Inner Reach.
All the streetlights around me, in the wall-to-wall prison of my city, flickering dirty neon over alleys mean and dirty streets, while my neighborhood is torn down around me. Too many people on the zombie streets, and the sirens make an eerie sound around me. Makes me cold, makes me hot, makes me freeze. And it's getting hard in the inner reach. Ever strange beneath the streets. All around where all the light waves meet.
Where all the light waves
and
dance in secret.
Kids with toys haunt the hallways, stuffing secrets up my sleeve. And the only country club around here is the cold cement under my feet. Most days I feel like a drowning man in a sea of drunken thieves. While this world goes on in a whirl around me, people look before they speak. And it's getting hard in the inner reach, ever strange beneath the streets. All around where all the light waves meet.
Is this the dawning of the age of Aquarius? explanations don't explain, and the conclusions don't conclude. When answers don't answer, and questions don't matter, and everything has gone so rude. Well, the stars incline, but don't insist. Everything is done in a dancing twist. All around where all the light waves meet and dance, and it's getting hard in the inner reach, ever strange beneath the streets. All around where all the light waves meet.
That was Inner Reach from New White Trash. Yours truly on lead vocals. New White Trash, we have like 18 more like that, and we don't have the money or the means to finish them, this is very difficult in this world, on this playing field, to say we have a linear track, we'd like to get an album, blah, blah, blah. We'd like to finish the music and get it out and get it heard. This song will be available. We hope to be able to have a Kickstarter site up to get the rest of these songs out, to get the album finished. Because we have in this band just a very unique blend of musical talent and perspectives that has produced some amazing music that is really relevant right now. I hope you guys like the song, and I'll try to bring you a new one as soon as I can, maybe another new song next week, and we'll keep you updated on that. Now, we're down to the last 9 minutes of the show. No one has called in tonight, so 1-888-874-4888, 1-888-874-4888. I am not surprised that Chris Dorner did not call in. I wouldn't have, but that was open, and he is in a place now, I will repeat, where every day he's out there, more people will be asking more questions about why things aren't working the way they should. I think Chief Beck has been doing a C++ job in handling this. I think his department faces potentially a huge embarrassment over the way this case was handled. And I do believe that it's possible that Chris Dorner is receiving aid from other warriors out there. I salute him for having been a warrior. I do not condone the murder of anybody, but I understand it. And what's clear to me is that he has found a huge crack in the system, and the longer he is out there, the bigger that crack gets. And as Leonard Cohen wrote, I quote this line frequently, there's a crack in everything, that's how the light gets in. I am not serving or supporting Chris Dorner. I am and always have served and supported the truth. And we are not served until we have looked at all of the truth head on with both eyes and accepted it and dealt with it and faced it. And the fact is that everything is broken. So I'm going to be watching that closely over the next week or so, as well as catching up on some projects. Now, I have to say, and this is my intense gratitude to everyone who was so generous in helping me around my birthday when the repo guys came for my car. You have helped me so much. I have some breathing room now, and I'm working on ways that I can use that time that you have given me to serve you better. We do have a caller. Tim from Buffalo, are you there?
Hi, yeah.
Hey, man. Did you hear the song?
Yeah, I did. It was good.
Thank you.
Well, it's really an honor to get to talk to you. I've been listening to your show for a while, and I first heard about you from watching Collapse. That was very impressionable for me. I just wanted to call in because you were talking about Chris Dorner, and you were talking about how, like, the things that he's doing are sort of demoralizing law enforcement and the LAPD, and I was wondering, like, with this trend of, like, demoralizing law enforcement and it sort of, it seems to contradict, like, another kind of trend with, the police state, like, the rising police state, I was wondering if you had any thoughts about that, how the two seemingly contradictory things.
That's a good point, Tim, and that's actually a great question. When Occupy was active, I was deeply involved with Occupy Santa Rosa, which was about an hour north of Oakland. And of course, we know what happened with Occupy Oakland. And there was a very clear indication that the chief of the Santa Rosa PD, he was talking like a gunfighter, I'm going to beat him up, throw him in jail, these people are not going to do that. And it looked very serious. The quote was, we'll use whatever means necessary to keep these people from pitching tents on City Hall. And I was called by my dear friend Errol Flora, who was an occupier with me there. God, I miss her and her family so much. They're up in Northeast Washington now. And I zoomed down there, and I was prepared to put my body in between the cops and the occupiers. But what happened was that I guess it was about 8 to 10 military veterans, all decorated, all honorable warriors. Let's say, for example, possibly like Christopher Dorner might have been an honorable warrior. We all showed up all with the same thought, that we were going to get out in front and we were going to let them beat on us and shoot us before, because that's what warriors do. They put their bodies in between what they love and the enemy. That's what a warrior does. And I think there's a lot of cops that feel that way. There was a captain, Ray Lewis, from the Philadelphia PD, who showed up in his uniform, standing up, and he paralyzed NYPD. And I believe in my heart, I know in my heart, that there are a great many cops of all ranks who know that Chris Dorner's cause is just. Nobody's agreeing with the tactics. We understand the tactics. But his presence out there is going to push these fault lines. And when I spoke, I was the last person to speak before we marched in Santa Rosa, when the cops backed down. Seeing that, and there was a great Native American contingent of warriors there who sang and drummed beautifully for us with enormous power there. And I was the last person to speak. And when I spoke to the cops, I addressed them, and I think this is up, I'm sure it's up on YouTube somewhere. I said, you guys got to get, the police departments are being cut back all over the place, and one of the first ones that will be cut will be the ones who are not bloodthirsty, the ones who won't kick ass when ordered without paying attention to a moral compass or rights or what's honorable. Those are the ones who are going to keep their jobs. And I could hear and I could feel that resonating throughout so many of the police officers that were there in Santa Rosa that day. And I believe that's happening all over the country. Many police officers can and do read. They understand NDAA. They understand that we are moving toward a massive confrontation over this gun control issue. And I got to repeat, I'm not going to believe that Chris Dorner wrote all that manifesto until I hear him say so. And it's being played. But a great many sentient cops are aware that we are being pushed increasingly toward a violent confrontation, which is exactly what I believe Homeland Security wanted during the Occupy movement, and I believe it's what is on the government's agenda now with all the gun control pushes. Bear in mind, and I'll just say this, and I'm not going too deep into that, that there are 300 million plus firearms in private hands in the United States already. So banning the sale of future weapons is not going to solve the problem. It has inflamed emotions, even as the government just had a rush order for 7,000 personal defense assault weapons, personal defense weapons, shooting .223 ammo. I mean, talking about both sides of your mouth. So I guess what I'm doing, and I guess this is what, this was a great question, Tim. I guess what I'm doing, and I guess what Chris Dorner is doing, is, the intention is to make people talk about the things that they don't want to talk about. Make people look at the turd in the punch bowl of human civilization. Or as Tom Waits said, you can't polish a turd. Amen. So I think this is very valuable. I've had communications from a number of police officers, some SWAT team members around the country, and they're all saying they buy his story completely, and nobody's endorsing it, but they get it. So what we want is for people to start seeing things differently, because that's how we achieve the change in human consciousness. Tim, thank you so much for calling. I'm afraid we're running out of time here on the Lifeboat Hour tonight. Thank all of you who listened, and man, we're just carrying on here, but there are things that inspire, things that wear us out, and we always look for those light waves that are meeting and dancing somewhere in secret, and we cannot wait for the day when we see them visually and the changes they bring in our lives. This is Mike Rupert, Tracker of Truth. I will be back with you next week for another episode of the Lifeboat Hour. Good night, everybody.